Hi everyone, thanks for joining this presentation of the Q1 2019 results. Today's presentation and the other results documents are available as usual on the investor section of the website if you don't already have them. As always, please note the disclaimer at the back. The agenda for this morning is outlined on page two and is very familiar at this point. In a moment, Steve Collar, President and CEO, will present the main business highlights before handing to Ferdinand Kaiser and J.P. Hemingway, the CEOs of SES Video and SES Networks, who will cover the main developments in their respective businesses. Andrew Browne, our CFO, will then cover the financial results in a bit more detail. After the presentation, there will of course be time to take questions. With that, I'll hand over to Steve.
Great. Thanks very much, Richard, and good morning, everyone. I'm actually in the U.S., which means it's slightly less of a good morning for me, but nonetheless, good to speak to you all. I'm going to talk you through the highlights before handing over to Ferd and J.P. Obviously, it's only a couple of months since our last update with the full year-end 2018 numbers, so fewer updates this time around, as I think you'd probably expect. Starting on page four, I'm happy with the start that we've made in 2019. Our Q1 results are in line with our expectations and consistent with the guidance that we gave in February. Revenue of 481 million is fractionally ahead on last year as on an as-reported basis, and a little over 2% down at constant exchange. Networks continues to grow well, which is very positive. Revenues were up almost 9% again in the quarter, and this follows on from a year of double-digit growth in 2018. We did have some periodic revenue in Q1 for Networks, but even with this, revenues were up 5.4% on an underlying basis. We expect that growth to continue and to develop over the course of the year, and that's going to be helped with the recent successful launch of the last four of our first-generation O3b satellites. They will join the constellation and enter service in Q3, and that will pave the way for our next-generation O3b mPOWER system, which we'll be launching in 2021, which we're very excited about. We talked last time about the ongoing reshaping of our organization around our customers. In Q1, we brought together all of our engineering resources under common leadership, and we've also stood up a common global services team across video and networks. The next step, which will be happening in Q2, will be the bringing together of our video infrastructure and services segments, and that should be done by Q3. Again, lots of good momentum coming from those internal organizational changes around our customers. Lastly on the page, we're making good progress on C-band. We're ready to go. We've bottomed out the technical solution, and we've briefed our customers, and I'll speak more to that in a second. Turning over to page five, the message is simply that Q1 is in line with our expectation and in line with our guidance for the full year. We're on track pretty much across the page on revenue at this early stage, and very much repeat and restate our outlook for the year. Likewise, we remain fully committed to investment grade, and as Andrew will speak, we will be at or below 3.3x by the end of the year. Lastly from me on page six, before Ferd and J.P. take us through in a little bit more detail, I'm going to speak a little bit to C-band. Good progress, as I said. We've provided our customers with a very detailed transition plan, and this explains exactly how through the launch of new satellites and the installation of filtering, we're going to be able to protect their services while at the same time freeing up important mid-band spectrum for 5G. That's included some exhaustive testing of the filtering and demonstrations of that filtering to our customers, and we now start to see our customers becoming much more comfortable with the solutions that we proposed and much more publicly supportive of the plan, which is obviously very important because we've said all along that protecting our customers is our first priority. You may have seen from the FCC Chairman's adoption of the 5G Fast initiative and his recent meetings with the President on the topic that rapid adoption of 5G in the U.S. is becoming a really key strategic topic. This was reinforced by Commissioner O'Reilly in his comments to the 5G Summit yesterday. Essentially, he was saying that it's time to action the plan to free mid-band spectrum. For context as to why that's the case, The CTIA, the Wireless Trade Association, estimates that 5G services will create over 3 million jobs and contribute $500 billion to the U.S. economy over the next 7 years, which is why, you know, we're focused on this, and the FCC is clearly focused on this. Really pleased that we were able to bring Peter Pitch on board to the CBA, who's leading our advocacy in government affairs, and we continue to work hard to align all interests and build consensus in favor of this unique win-win market-based approach. Obviously, the FCC and the chairman controls the timing, but we're ready to execute, and we feel we've made some very important steps over the last few weeks. And with that, I'll hand over to Ferd, who's going to talk a little bit more about our video business.
Thank you, Steve. Starting with the highlights for Azure's Video on slide 8. In the first quarter of 2019, Azure's Video generated revenue of $304 million. This represented an underlying decline of 7%, which, as Steve has mentioned, was fully in line with our expectations. This included, for the first time, the impact of the lower revenue from the U.S. wholesale contracts that we mentioned in February, and the 7%, while in line with the 2019 guidance, is not indicative of the expected long-term revenue trajectory. The market conditions remain challenging, but nevertheless, we can point to a number of positives in Q1. The first one is the 6% growth year-on-year for the number of high-definition channels being distributed via our fleet, 2,880 in total. This is complementing with the 34% growth in the commercial Ultra HD channels, where, interestingly, our biggest UHD region is Europe, where we now serve 20 UHD commercial channels with the most premium content. The second good news is the annual update of our technical reach. 355 million TV households, or over 1 billion people, now rely on Azure for their TV signal. We noted reach stability in our core European positions, where Azure delivers over 60% of all TV distribution in Europe, directly through DTH or indirectly via alternative means, including IPTV feeds. In North America, our reach declined slightly, but this is consistent with our long-term view. Yet, despite this reduction, as Steve mentioned, C-band cable neighborhoods remain the cornerstone of video distribution in the U.S. This is more than offset with the strong growth in our international markets, where we reached 6 million new TV households, and where we felt that we had to include Kenya in our analysis, as satellite distribution is growing fast in this country, and where we are able to identify another 2 million TV households relying on their satellites. I'm also pleased to report that not only we reach more people in those international markets, but we also enrich the neighborhoods for these growing audiences with 18% channel growth in those regions. And as a result, and to conclude on this point, even if the market conditions can be challenging, we build solid foundations for the long-term revenue streams in those markets. Lastly, our initiative to combine our video distribution and our video services activities that we mentioned in February is well underway and progressing well. During the first quarter, we concluded some important contracts. We have mentioned some of those on slide 9. A long-term contract, 9 years in North America, with the Crown Media Group for the Hallmark channel portfolio, which will be distributed via Azure's One to more than 85 million cable homes in the US. In Europe, we concluded an important capacity renewal with the Nordics Entertainment Group for Scandinavia. In Africa, beside Nigeria, Ghana, and Ivory Coast, with Benin, we added another country to the list of the countries for which we are distributing the signal of the digital terrestrial distribution via satellite. In Benin, this means 15 free-to-air channels, some of them in high definition, which are distributed to the digital terrestrial transmitters and which are also available for DTH reception. In the video services area, I should mention the renewal and extension for Discovery in Germany. Besides the distribution via the prime orbital position 19.2 MX1 is going to handle all the playout and content management related activities for 7 channels of the Discovery Group in both Germany and Austria, and this for both linear and non-linear content. On HD Plus, I should mention the agreements with Panasonic and Samsung regarding their new TV sets sold in Germany as of this spring, which includes the HD Plus software-based conditional access and an operator app allowing the users of HD Plus to access various streaming services and comfort functions like catch-up and start-over. Similar agreements with other TV set manufacturers will follow. So now, moving to the individual video segments in more detail, starting with the distribution part on slide 10. Underlying revenue was 8.1% lower than last year. So our US wholesale business is lower than last year based on our recent renewal. In addition, we continue to see some volume reductions in the cable business. In Europe, we noted some slight volume reductions, especially with some long-term renewals secured at the end of 2018. In addition, we continue to experience the effect of the expiration of certain capacity contracts signed on a short-term basis, as noted in the second part of 2018. And as mentioned before, international markets continued to be challenging, but I'm happy to see the effects of our recent wins, as the pace of the decline is now much slower than it was the case in 2018. Finally, on slide 11, video services were 4.5% lower than last year. HD Plus was stable with a sustained number of paying subscribers in Q1 2019 compared to last year. Regarding MX1, revenue was lower as we continued to shift our portfolio and exit certain low-margin legacy contracts. This is part of the bigger initiative I have mentioned earlier and will continue an even stronger value proposition and will ensure an even stronger value proposition for our customers who will see greater benefit from the combination of our infrastructure and services capabilities, especially in the IP and non-linear video space. And with that, I hand over to GP.
Thank you, Fer, and good morning all. So starting with the highlights for SES Networks on slide 13. As Steve said, after a great 2018, we continue to deliver solid growth in Q1 2019, with Networks delivering 5.4% underlying revenue growth. We reported total revenue of €176 million in the first quarter, and we grew across multiple segments, including government, aero, cruise, mobile network operators, and energy. I am also confident our strong results will continue to improve as we increasingly leverage the capabilities of our GEO HTS satellites. SES 15 continues to be a very successful satellite. We are ramping on SES 14 and serve our first customers on SES 12. The value of these GEO assets are further enhanced when combined with our unique MEO infrastructure. As you heard, we successfully launched 4 additional O3b satellites earlier in the month, bringing our total to 20. And with that launch, we have now finalized the first and still only broadband NGSO constellation in service since 2014. Fully proving out our MEO space technology, the enabling ground infrastructure, managed high-capacity solutions, and crucially the business model, marks an inflection point on the journey towards O3b mPOWER, our next-generation MEO system. We've now put in place a larger, dedicated team to match the development stage of O3b mPOWER from both a technology and business perspective, increasing our focus on delivering the value of unprecedented flexibility, exponential scale, and powerful network performance. So now I'd like to move on to our next slide, 14, and take a look at some of our recent customer successes. When I reflect on these activities and what we focus our customer-facing teams on is the incredibly broad and positive impact that we're having on our customers' businesses and indeed their end users. In Indonesia, we're working with Tele Global to connect communities across many remote areas of the country with high-performance cellular and broadband services from SES 12. A perfect example of how satellite solutions can quickly deliver where conventional terrestrial-based networks may take far longer and be cost prohibitive to deploy, reaching in this case to over 15,000 sites. In the industrial energy sector, low latency connectivity is a requirement for digitizing real-time operations, which makes our MEO low latency a logical solution. We have recently helped our customer Resolute Mining to fully digitize a remote mine in Mali to improve the safety and productivity of their operations, whilst also allowing them to capitalize on enterprise cloud applications, which is game-changing to their business. We're also proud to support the launch of an entirely new concept in the maritime market, the Ritz-Carlton Yacht Collection. With a high-end digital experience powered by SES Networks, Ritz-Carlton is aiming to deliver its guests a highly curated luxury experience at sea, enabled by our managed data services and delivered over an intelligent hybrid MEO-GEO network solution. We continue to report key new wins in this sector, announced our select innovation partnership with Carnival, and also started to take project revenues from previous wins, such as MSC Cruises. And we continued our progress in the public sector with the European Maritime Safety Agency, or EMSA, for whom we are delivering high-performance managed service to enable security, safety, and anti-pollution surveillance operations by connecting remotely piloted aircraft systems. So now I'll just flip through the individual verticals' performance, starting with government on slide 15. We reported nearly 10% underlying growth in the first quarter compared to last year, with positive developments in our two government segments. First, with the US government, where MEO solutions are now quickly deployed on demand through the blanket purchase agreement, and we also saw growth in a number of geo-based programs. And then with our global government business, which included positive contribution across all of our portfolio, including GovSat 1, the continued momentum in supporting critical humanitarian operations, and our institutional programs. Moving on to fixed data on slide 16. In a challenging environment, fixed data was slightly down in Q1 2019 by just over 1% overall, a result which we still believe is a robust performance and reflects some project timing aspects. We continue to report new commercial successes with telcos and mobile network operators, especially in the Americas, as we discussed earlier, starting to take leverage of SES 12 across Asia. Finally, in mobility on slide 17, we continue to deliver in Q1 another strong quarter with nearly 9% underlying growth. Aero continues to be a significant driver of growth, specifically with the ramp of SES 15 and the adoption of SES 14 and indeed our KA-based aero network, which enabled expansion with our service provider partners to airlines across the Americas. In maritime, our power positioning crews continue to be strong. We start to see the contribution of recent wins, expand on others, and continue to add new brands, and confirm the important ongoing growth potential of this segment. So in summary, 2019 is developing as per our expectations. The addition of SES 12, the ramp of SES 15 and SES 14, and the entry into commercial service of the new block of O3b satellites, all will continue to support our growth. Complementing this industry-leading fleet, we are continuing to develop our intelligent network capabilities, cloud integration and managed service solutions, so we can continue to deliver differentiated offerings that bring meaningful business value to our customers. And with that, I'll hand over to Andrew.
Thanks very much, JP. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. So financial highlights, turning to page 19, as Steve has mentioned, we delivered a solid performance in line with expectations and we remain on track to meet 2019 financial outlook, as we indeed accomplished in 2018. Revenue for the quarter was 480.6 million, with underlying revenue lower by 3.1%, where networks generated underlying growth of 5.4%. On a reported basis, revenue was 0.6% higher, with the benefit of the stronger US dollar at constant FX. Total revenue, including periodic and other, was 2.3% lower than the prior year. EBITDA of 290.1 million represented an EBITDA margin of 60.4%, or 62.1%, when excluding the 8.3 million restructuring charge that we have provided for. We continue to invest in expanding our network business, and this led to an increase in OPEX of 7.1 million at a constant basis when excluding the net impact of restructuring cost, a delta of 3.3 million compared to Q1 last year. But combined with movement in revenue, we consequently see EBITDA 4.7% lower as reported and 7% at constant FX. Net profit is 72.2 million compared with 98.2 million last year, and essentially following the trend in EBITDA with additional depreciation related to the new satellites being brought into service. Free cash flow before financing of 84.3 million benefits from the 31.7% reduction in investing activities compared with the Q1 of last year, and somewhat offset by working capital timing movements in the quarter. Net debt to EBITDA 3.4 times compared with 3.41 at Q1 21-18, so slightly lower. This reflects a similar payment phasing as last year, with a significant portion of cash outflow for CapEx, interest, and the dividend being weighed in the first half of the year. Accordingly, we expect to achieve at or below 3.3 times at the end of the year and in line with our commitment to investment grade status. Finally, there's no change to the financial outlook and also including the CapEx forecast. Revenue, so turning quickly now to the remaining pages and starting with revenue on page 20. The change in FX, as you can see, accounted for a positive 14.5 million out of a total movement on a reported basis. At constant FX, the underlying business was 15.1 million or 3.1% lower, reflecting the growth in networks and expected video development. That's what we just discussed a little earlier. Total revenue included 6.7 million of periodic and other revenue compared with 3.1 million in Q1 2018. Turning to EBITDA on page 21, EBITDA was 4.7% lower as reported and 7% lower adjusting for the change in FX. As mentioned in our previous calls, the investment in networks is the main driver of the increase of underlying OpEx as the business continues to grow. In addition, we booked 8.3 million of restructured charges as part of our ongoing program to optimize our overall operating structures and operations across the group. Accordingly, EBITDA margin was 60.3% and excluding the charge, 62.1%. Net profit on page 22 was 72.2 million for the quarter. Depreciation was higher, reflecting the entry into the service of new satellites, as already mentioned, including the lower net interest expense. Net financing costs were in line with the prior year and benefited from higher levels of capitalized interest. We recorded 7.2 million of a tax charge in Q1 2019, representing an effective tax rate of 9.6%, and some gains in non-controlling interest for 4 million. These two line items were affected in quarter 1 2018 by the deferred tax asset related to the entry into service of a GovSat 1 satellite that we own in partnership with the Luxembourg government. CapEx on page 23, as already mentioned, is no change compared to what we had outlined in February. Turning to page 24 on leverage development, net debt to EBITDA stands at 3.4 times, and as mentioned, this compares to 3.41 times in the same period last year. We expect 2019 to follow the same quarterly trend in 18 and accordingly expect to be at below 3.3 times by the end of the year, in line with our commitment to investment grade status. In March, we paid 500 million US bonds, and using proceeds from the Schuldschein we completed in Q4 last year, and with no further senior debt instruments maturing now until March of 2020. Lastly, on page 25, financial outlook, and as Steve and myself have discussed, there's no change to the outlook that we presented in February, and we're currently on track to deliver on 2019, as indeed we did in 2018. And just to remind everyone, the 2019 EBITDA outlook excludes the 25 to 30 million of restructuring charges, as we had outlined in February. So overall expectation is expected to deliver growth in revenue and EBITDA between 2018 and 2020. So with that, I would conclude and hand back to Richard for, opening up for some questions.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks, team. Over to questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. And to cancel your request, you can press the hash key. We will now take our first question. Your first question comes from the line of Sami Kassab from Exane. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's Sami at Exane. I have three questions, please. The first one, can you elaborate on the return to revenue growth in fixed data in the remainder of this year? You refer to timing. Does this mean we should expect the networks division to see an acceleration in the revenue growth from the 5% reported in Q1? Secondly, within the networks division, can you break down the 5% growth between pricing and volumes? Consultants are talking about a 15% price decline in 19. Can you give some color on how pricing and volumes are trending? And lastly, on C-band, do you expect the U.S. Treasury to take a cut on C-band proceeds as it did in 2017 with the broadcaster auction? Thank you.
Okay, so maybe I will take the first two questions in relation to, I think they were both in terms of fixed data or certainly networks. So the first one around the Q1 performance and the return to revenue in fixed data. I mentioned timing. So indeed, there's been some challenges we see in the market, growing the business there. It is a very, very competitive market. But we, as I highlighted, have won some significant opportunities. We talked about one just here with Tele Global. The timing part of this is when you win those deals, it obviously takes a while to get the equipment installations and therefore service revenues underway. So when we get those projects delivered and service revenues underway, we do expect to return back to the low single-digit growth that we outlined in our sort of previous outlook for fixed data. In terms of general, I think the second question was in general around networks or indeed fixed data, but you know, overall, yes. Pricing is obviously under pressure, but we maintain a differentiated service offering. Certainly, in some of the segments where we're showing significant growth with government and mobility, we have a very differentiated offering. But to offset that pricing decline, where we see it, because we do have differentiated offering, we are seeing significant growth in both volumes and new customers, which is ultimately the most important thing.
And shall we expect the networks division to see an acceleration in revenue growth in the remainder of the year, or is it too early to say?
Oh, it's obviously early in the year, but we do anticipate growth through the entire year. So obviously the 1% year-on-year in Q1 down is not where we expect to end at the end of the year.
Thank you, John Paul.
And Sammy, I'll take the C-band question. Look, I mean, you know, we've been fairly clear about not speculating too much about proceeds, either from the perspective of Quantum or what we would do or what have you. And I would kind of give the same response, frankly, on would we expect the Treasury to take a cut, as you put it. I think clearly, you know, whatever proceeds there are, we're going to pay tax on. I think over and above that, what we've said is this is a market-based proposal, and it's the kind of the name implies the expectation in terms of why this makes logical sense. And I think if we reflect on the bigger goal here, which is 5G fast in the US, that's where at least we're seeing the administration to be focused right now.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Alexander Patek from Societe Generale. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking my question. I'd like to revert a little bit to video. Can you help us understand the underlying like-for-like trajectory of declines in the video distribution? We've seen a steady worsening in declines over the past 2 years, from low single-digit declines in 2017 to mid-single-digit declines in 18, and now we're at high single digits at nearly minus 9. Now, I understand you had some pretty tough renewals coming through in the second half, and that leads to the current declines. But can you make us or help us understand how we should get to a more moderate decline in the remainder of the year? What are the levers behind this? And should we actually model low single-digit declines in some future in this business?
Yeah, first of all, as mentioned, so the decline, we have a combination of factors we have had in North America with the reduction of the wholesale business we have had there, and some switch of SDE channels in the cable business, as these were channels which have been simulcasted. On the other hand, also some factors coming in from Europe, so some slight volume reductions referring to renewals which were concluded at the end of last year. On the other hand, I should also mention that there are no significant renewals on the agenda for the next couple of years. So total renewals represent less than 5% of the revenues in both 19 and 20. And so the minus 8 should not be considered as indicative of a kind of long-term trend in video.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Nick Dempsey from Barclays. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Good morning, guys. I've got three left. First of all, restructuring, you talked about 25 to 30 million for the year. I think you said it would be first half weighted at the full year results. You've done 8 point something in Q1, so just over a quarter of that. So should we expect a big number in Q2 for restructuring and therefore low number for the margin? Second question, how much more revenue is there sitting in video services that is the low margin contract that you're casting loose? And when can we expect to see the end of that effect within your video growth? And last question, on C-band, I suppose the market is expecting a delay beyond Q2. You guys, last time we asked you, you said Q2 would be when the decision would come. Do you now expect a delay?
Nick, yeah, this is Andrew. Just on your first question, indeed, that will be the case. We would expect by the half year that approximately 70 to 80% of the restructuring sort of cost. So indeed, your hypothesis is correct.
So on the video services, indeed, we are not renewing business, in particular business with low margin, in which we factor in third-party capacity. And this is an exercise which will continue during the months to come, but it has been a kind of strategic decision, both because of the low margin and the third-party capacity we are reselling here to get out of those contracts.
And Nick, I'll take the question on C-band. So look, I mean, this is a pretty complex proceeding, and the chairman is on record relatively recently of saying, he's focused on getting it right, and we're focused on that as well. Speed to 5G is pretty critically important and a pretty key part of that. And what we're focused on is making sure that we're ready to go. And I think that's underscored by the good work we've done on the technical side, working with our customers, sort of, and building consensus around the plan. Ultimately, the FCC and the chairman control the timing, so they're better placed to answer that. I think, sitting where we are, Q2 seems unrealistic. But again, I wouldn't speculate much beyond that. What is clear is that there's a lot of focus on this, and increasing focus, and I think that's that's good news with respect to the market-based proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning. I just had two questions. First was a follow-up on video. I mean, there's clearly a lot of moving parts, and it sounds like versus your sort of average renewal rate over the last, say, 5 years of 10%, you've got quite a low renewal rate going forward. So really what I wanted to ask was, has that come around because you've pulled forward some of the renewals, or customers have? And then secondly, I was wondering if you could give us a bit more detail on the renewals in Q4 and then also the Nordic renewals in terms of the price and volume dynamics. And then just a quick follow-up on C-band. Clearly, you've done a lot of work on the technical side, and it sounds like you've been really winning over your customers. So does that change your view at all in the long run around ever going beyond the 200 megahertz that's proposed and the feasibility? Thanks very much.
So on the renewals in video, proportion of our contracts are long-term contracts, we have a very good visibility. And there are years in which a major renewal is up with major customers. And then there are years during which, indeed, the overall percentage of the business to be renewed is substantially reduced. And we have had important years with very important renewals in 2015, 16, and 17. And now 18 was kind of medium, and 19, 20, as I mentioned, renewals represent less of than 5% of the total business. Now, indeed, last year there were some renewals towards the end of the year, which resulted, one in the UK, in a kind of different mix of capacity, a different combination between high power and medium power capacity, which resulted in a slight price reduction. Elsewhere, there was a lower volume reduction factored in the contract because the pay TV operator decided to reduce the number of channels. But all this is manageable, and of course, given the high prices we have in Europe, if there is a slight variance, this has a kind of impact which we see in the figures.
So we're going to just follow up on the Nordic renewal as well?
Yes. The Nordic renewals, so the Nordic Entertainment Group is in fact the follow-on company of the former MTG. And his business has been split. So the Nordic Entertainment Group is covering or continues to cover Scandinavia, and then there is another entity covering the Baltics. And here on the Nordic Entertainment Group, the renewal has been done on the medium term for more or less the same volume of capacity.
And the price?
And the price table.
Okay. Yeah, thanks very much.
And the price table.
And then on, Michael, I'll take the C-band. So look, I mean, our proposal, as you know, is very clear. 200 megahertz cleared within 36 months. And actually, you know, having the support of our customers is very much consistent with having a very clear and definitive plan around that. And actually, we don't have a plan and don't have the ability to execute on sort of spectrum clearing beyond that. Now, you know, if we look at, you know, 5-7 years and the development of HEVC and different technology, then who knows? But essentially, to get clear now, to get 200 megahertz clear for C-band in the next 18 to 36 months, it's absolutely important that we're focused on this 200 megahertz clearing and nothing beyond.
Thanks, that's really clear.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Sarah Simon from Berenberg. Please ask your question, your line is now open.
Yeah, hi, I've got three questions, and they're all about video. So first one was, you talked about bringing MX1 closer to the distribution business. So are you likely to combine those segments in future, or are you going to continue to report them separately? Because obviously, if they're more entwined, it's going to be harder to kind of separate. Second one, just so we can get an idea of the quantum, can you give us an idea of the proportion of your video revenues that you think are in these kind of shorter-term capacity contracts rather than the long-term? Because obviously, you've highlighted the issues in Europe, but just to get an idea of how big that sort of short-term bit is. And then the last one was, with the phasing out of the low-margin MX1 revenues, are you phasing out those revenues kind of simultaneous with the ending of the third-party capacity deals that you signed to deliver those revenues, or is there going to be a mismatch there? Thanks.
Thanks, for the question. So on the first one, indeed, it is about combining the distribution activities with the services activities, because we realize that customers want one contract and one combined offer. And in particular, in the international markets where the pricing is highly competitive, it is important to have this kind of differentiator as a kind of competitive advantage. On the proportion of the short-term contracts, so basically the vast majority of the contracts, and it is more than 95%, are long-term contracts. The short-term contract is occasional use and spot and events. And this is a quite smaller part of the business, less than 5%. It's developing an interesting dynamic, in particular in sports and events, where we see very interesting developments representing certain potential. And on your third part, phasing the phasing out of the low margin capacity are indeed linked to, for most of them, to the third-party capacity deals, which we do not want to renew, and we reverse when they come up from renewal.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Paul Sidney from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I just had a couple of questions, and one on video and one on C-band. Just on video, really just trying to bring together a lot of the questions that we've already have. I mean, is the right way to think about it, you know, we should see, you know, clearly less drag from North American wholesale in 2020 versus 2019, no renewals for 2 years, as you've said. So clearly, just mechanically from an easier comp, 2020 should see better revenue trends in video than 2019. So firstly, is that correct? And actually, you know, we're used to talking about all the headwinds in video, but is there anything that actually could go positively over the next few years? I mean, you know, we used to talk at length about Ultra HD on the call, and it seems as though it's not something that we're really that's being discussed. But just wondering if there's anything that could go, you know, that could go well in that sector. And then on C-band, Steve, just a follow-up. The FCC has been sitting on this now for more than a year. What do you think is the big debate? Is it the actual principle of the proposal, or is it really about process and value? Thank you.
So on the trends in video, as mentioned before, the minus 7% should not be considered as indicative of the longer term revenue trajectory, given also the visibility we have. On the positive side, what we see now is an good development of the number of Ultra HD channels. As mentioned before, we have now 43 commercial channels. And when we say commercial channels, we exclude the demo channels or test channels. So these are commercial channels, 43 commercial channels on air, out of which 20 in Europe. And we have additional ones in the pipeline. This is definitely an area in which we will see positive development this year and during the years to come.
Yeah, look, and on C-band, I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as having been sitting on it for a year. I think, you know, firstly, the FCC has, I think, made more spectrum available and auctioned more spectrum over the last year in different bands than sort of in any previous administration. And we certainly see them being very sort of committed to doing that and the general development of the 5G ecosystem. I think, you know, with the mid-band, they've gone through the NPRM process. It's obviously a little more complex than simply identifying other parts of spectrum and auctioning it, right? This spectrum is in use, and there's a lot of work that has to be done to sort of free it up, to make it available, and so it's there's more hair on, you know, it's more challenging than simply moving forward on a sale process. I do think that what we've seen over the last month or two suggests that, you know, the strategic importance is now recognized and is increasing, and my hope and expectation is that we'll see this moving forward over the course of the next few weeks and months.
Great, thank you. Maybe I could just have a quick follow-up on Ultra HD for Ferdinand. Is there any projections you have in terms of the number of global channels or number of channels you expect to be delivering over the next few years? Just be interesting to hear your view on that.
No, we do not have a real projection to communicate to outside. Also, given the competition and the competitive situation we have with other operators.
Okay, understood. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And we will now take our last question. It comes from the line of Patrick Wellington from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everybody. A couple of questions. Steve, on C-band, the FCC has indicated for quite a long time, as you were saying before, sort of end June style decision. You think that's a bit optimistic? So what are we talking about? Are we talking about an end September decision, or do you think it gets delayed beyond that? If you think end June's not happening, what's your sort of scale of the sort of sideways shift there? And then secondly, Intelsat 29e, do you get a benefit from that in terms of capacity shifting over to some of your satellite capacity?
Yeah. I mean, Patrick, I've pretty much said what I have to say on timing. It is the FCC and the chairman who gets to dictate the timing. My comment on Q2 is simply we don't necessarily see a report and order, you know, the activity that would suggest a report and order coming out in the next 2 months. But who knows? We could be surprised. I do think, you know, what we do see is renewed to the extent that it was ever not there, but renewed focus on mid-band, renewed focus on C-band, and a lot of, you know, steps being taken both with the FCC, but also with all of the other stakeholders, cable, you know, our customers, the, you know, all of the parties that are kind of involved in this process. We see things moving, and that's sort of positive, and definitely we have momentum. So, yeah, I mean, more than that, wouldn't want to speculate on timing. It's obviously not for us. I think the important thing is that we're ready to go and that we are, you know, we have a plan that's fully executable, and that's, you know, that's what we can control, and that's very much the case. And then on I-29E, look, I mean, you know, so first of all, I'd say no failures in the industry is a good thing. And we actually have a very good and strong relationship with Intelsat around, you know, sort of mutual backup and protection, and that is something that we've been working with them to help them as they kind of go through looking to restore customers that they have.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have one last question. It comes from the line of Giles Thorne from Jefferies. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Thank you. It was two final questions, both on C-band, and I guess they're interrelated. So turning away from, let me just ask the question directly. Given this past few weeks and past few months has seen a real pickup in the noise around the C-band situation, and with an increasingly divergent range of views on this particular matter, it feels that the FCC, like any regulator, is ultimately going to have to try and be pragmatic in their approach and bring forward something that caters to everyone's tastes. So my question is, it would be useful to get a reminder of what the CBA's red lines are. So if when that order comes through, and I don't think there's a debate about if, it's when it comes through, what would make you walk away? And then secondly, connected to that, could you remind us, please, on how you and Intelsat reconcile your views on opportunity costs, given your dramatically differing financial positions? Thank you.
Giles, I'm not quite sure how to answer either of those questions, but I'll give it a go. So look, I actually think what we've seen over the last few months is a pretty, you know, pretty healthy debate, right? And some views that are held for good reason, some other views that I think are probably more influenced by, you know, competitive situation and so on. But I think, you know, there's some, you know, very real things that have to get sort of solved through this market-based proposal. But actually, I don't see as much noise, characterizing it the way that you did over the last, 4-6 weeks as maybe was the case at the beginning of the year or the back end of last year. And that's really reflecting my comments earlier where I said I think we are making good progress in bringing together and addressing the myriad concerns that there are out there. And I think that's a good thing. And so I feel like we have some good positive momentum. I think the CBA is doing a good job. I think that, Peter coming on board has been very positive. And so I don't necessarily see noise. I actually think that we're kind of aligning, and I think we'll see more of that. I certainly hope we'll see more of that over the coming weeks. And then you said, how do I reconcile the view with Intelsat about what, Giles?
Forgive the overly convoluted wording, but Intelsat and SES are two businesses with very different financial positions. And if an order comes through that is a deviation from the wording, the letter of the CBA proposal, it might be, hypothetically, that you think, yeah, I'm okay with that. And then it might be that Intelsat thinks, oh, I can't work with that because I've got my own agenda. So right. Can you remind us of how those differing agendas, different views on opportunity cost, have been reconciled through the agreement that you have around the constitution of the CBA?
Well, what I'd say again to that is, we haven't seen any of that, right? So the CBA has been very united from the very beginning, and this higher goal of how do we collectively protect our customers, but at the same time, free up spectrum, which is clearly important and clearly of strategic need within the US, and not only ourselves and Intelsat, but also Eutelsat and Telesat, have all been of the same mind on pretty much every topic. And so we haven't really seen, Giles, any difference of view, whether it be related to our, financial positions or anything else. And long may that continue. I think it's a really, really unique example of, the satellite industry coming together and the four main players, the four players in the US coming together and sort of agreeing on the best way to sort of succeed in those two, what you would think would be mutually incompatible things to do, i.e., looking after our customers and also freeing up spectrum for 5G use. So we don't see any of that, and long may that continue.
Thank you, Steve. And a follow-up to the first question, and it's a closed question. If an FCC order comes forward in the next few months that is in spirit, the CBA proposal, but not the exact form, if there's some kind of permutation or derivation of the CBA proposal, not the exact CBA proposal, does the CBA walk away?
No, look, I mean, I'm not going to get into, language like walk away, Giles. This is a serious process, right, where we're trying to look after the interests of multiple stakeholders. We're speaking with the FCC, the various different bodies within the FCC on a regular basis, as you see from our ex parte filings. And so by definition, kind of how this could go and how do we make sure we're looking after the interests of everybody is something that's happening through those conversations. And I wouldn't foresee what you've just described ever happening, because I think we would, have had those conversations through the process of the engagements that are ongoing with the various different stakeholders as we go.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Well, maybe I'll just close it out then by saying thanks very much, everyone, for joining. And we look forward to speaking to you all on our Q2 results at the time. So thanks very much for all taking the time to join.